sounds somehow familiar. Where have I heard that before?
Yeah, someone's knocking. Did you hear
Fate,
that?
Or it could be the yellow hammer. We don't know.
Yeah, I guess it's Beethoven 5, and everybody knows the famous opening. And it's part of our last classical concert of the season, 2/5 and a 5th.
And the familiar voice you're hearing is, of course, Gregory Voigt. It's hard to believe that the season is ending this week.
I know. We just started it, right?
Yeah, just a few weeks ago. It begins with the familiar sound of Beethoven. People think they know the Beethoven 5, but there's so... I mean, it's overwhelming how much stuff there is.
Yeah, there's more to it than just the first four notes, believe it or not.
It keeps going.
It keeps going. And, of course, all movements are familiar. And the popularity of the piece is due to... all the inventions and all the fantastic structure that he builds and the fantastic power that he has in this composition. It's actually two monsters, you know, for a conductor. These two pieces are really just big, and it's a great challenge. I'm loving it, actually.
Yeah, there's, in fact, a book has been written called The First Four Notes, Beethoven's Fifth in the Human Imagination. It's written by Matthew Guerrieri, and Günter Schürrle, the American composer and conductor, calls the opening one of the most feared conducting challenges in the entire classical literature.
Now I'm shaking.
It's terrifying. And then British conductor Norman Del Mar says it's useless to try and formulate the way this is done in terms of conventional stick technique. It's direction by pure force of gesture and depends entirely on the willpower and total conviction of the conductor. Is he right?
Let me just go home and think about that. You know, I try not to overthink it.
Yeah.
I have a way of doing it, and so far it worked, so I think I'm going to try the same.
And we've heard it before. I mean, Carlos Prieto conducted the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra in Beethoven 5 a couple of years ago. How do you approach it differently?
I approach it my way, you know. I mean, every time I conduct a piece, especially such a well-known part of the core repertoire, you always have to look at it with fresh eyes and just rediscover it for yourself. And that's what I'm doing, you know, tempi and articulation. And of course, I remember how I did it last time, and I want to do it somewhat differently, because that keeps me fresh and keeps it fresh for the audience.
And for me, as a classical music radio host, I never get tired of it. It was on Performance Today the other day, and I was coming home from work, and I had to sit in the driveway and listen to it. I know how it ends. I wanted to hear the whole thing.
That's why it's a work of a genius, is that you don't get tired of it, and you can listen to it again and again. And whenever you listen to it, I remember myself listening to it as a teenager, you know, and I can actually remember what it felt like, with all the feelings that it would bring, right? And now it's different, and I have my own history with this composition, just like everybody else who ever went to a concert or even didn't go, but you heard it or you own it or you listen to it on the radio. So I think it's all there, you know. It's like a Shakespeare play. Like you have your own Beethoven 5, I think, and that's what you hear. And then, of course, you hear a little bit of what Gregory Voigt is doing with the Huntsville Symphony this weekend.
I tried not to read too much, but there's so much written about it. One of my favorite comments was somebody, they did not identify the person, but as somebody who scribbled into Anton Schindler's biography of Beethoven, says, something about the beginning of the C minor symphony. Many men were disturbed over the beginning of the fifth. One of them asked Beethoven about the reason for this unusual opening and its meaning. Beethoven answered, "The beginning sounds and means you are too dumb."
it's like don't ask questions like that, right? No, I mean, if you listen to how it goes on, then it's all clear that it's the same actually as in the last movement of Symphony Number 3, is that he has this very basic elemental idea that he just starts with it. There's no introduction, nothing, just right into it. And then he starts, you know, developing it. He starts playing with it, and he builds this fantastic building by using this musical brick.
Have you heard the Leonard Bernstein lecture about the piece where he finds the old autograph score and puts in the weird stuff that Beethoven experimented with? Like, there was a flute in the opening. It sounded like an uninvited guest at a party.
Listen, just by looking at the opening bars, you know, strings and clarinets and nobody else, you know, I mean, there are trombones sitting there for movements and not playing anything. Maybe he added them later, you know, just for the last movement. Or the trumpets, their French horns, his timpani, they're not playing. And it's still just so powerful without using the entire orchestra. And I'm pretty sure that he had to go through many, many different versions before he came up with this one.
He did struggle with it. I think it took him like 4 years to write it. And if you see the original score, there's lots of scratches and erases and holes in it and stuff where he wanted to get it right. And I think he did.
Well, he was writing the theme of the Ninth Symphony for years. I mean, the earliest sketches date back long, long years before he actually wrote the piece. So there are these, you know, really strong ideas that just need time to come to life, I guess.
We've been talking about the opening, but it gets better. Let's hear some. It keeps getting better.
Even better than this.
From that, yes. So what do you want to listen to next in the Beethoven 5?
The slow movement, because that's one of the, I don't know, it just talks to me. You know, Beethoven is talking to me, help.
We're listening to the slow movement of Beethoven's Symphony No. 5. It's more than just dun-dun-dun-dun. So what is Beethoven saying to you now, Gregory Voida?
What is he saying to me now? I was just thinking about the so-called slow movements. I mean, it's not really slow, mm-mm, right? It's more like a moderate tempo. But I was just thinking how these movements are different in character and how it balances out everything within the symphony, not only in number 5, but in other so-called big symphonies, right? 3 and and even 9. I mean, number 9, we just, you know, did it not long ago here. The slow movement, I think, is actually the why he wrote the symphony. That's my, you know, personal feeling about it. And of course, everybody knows the last movement of Symphony No. 9, but the slow movement is just so beautiful and it's just so powerful and it's long, you know, it's a long, long piece of music. And this movement is actually the longest of the four movements in Beethoven 5. This movement and not the scherzo or not the first movement or not the last movement, interestingly enough. And it doesn't feel long because it just flows.
It's, you know, got like this coiled energy to it.
Yeah.
If you know it, you know it's about to spring forward, but yeah, it builds that tension. And again, I think Beethoven did a perfect job in constructing this. And, you know, people were asking Beethoven about the meaning of the opening, the meaning of the symphony. And, you know, Beethoven had his lack of ideas, but I don't think it really matters. I think it means something to everybody, because I might hear it differently based on my experiences, but everybody seems to be moved by it.
Yeah, I don't think you should be put your feelings into words, actually, or unless you're a musicologist and you want to make money by writing a book, like, you know, why talk about it when the whole point is that it's your Beethoven 5 and it's your slow movement of the Beethoven 5, and you have your memories and it's difficult, if not impossible, to share it with anybody just by talking about it. You have to listen. Thank you.
Fritz Reiner and the Chicago Symphony Orchestra galloping through that last movement of the Beethoven No. 5. And we've got 7 more minutes left on this particular track, but it just keeps getting more exciting.
Absolutely. There's just so much energy in this piece. And I'm not even sure why we're talking about this piece so much.
Because you're here.
Because I'm here. Oh, thanks. Okay. No, what I mean is that, you know, one of the few pieces with a real name recognition in this business. You know, you say Beethoven 5 and there it goes. Everybody knows mm-hmm. what it is. Everybody runs to the box office and buys the tickets, and which is good, which is great. And of course, there's a reason. Why we're talking about it is that we are trying to find it out what the secret is. And I'm so happy that we can't really find out what the secret is mm-hmm. because that's the whole point, is that it's music and it's mystery and it happens live, and you got to be there and hear it live at the BBC.
Especially if you've never heard the piece live before, it's an amazing experience. I mean, because we all think we know it, again, but you don't know it until you've been in the concert hall with your friends and family and neighbors, with the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra on the stage, and it's just an amazing experience. We're not going to talk about it anymore unless you want to add something.
No, I'm adding another Symphony No. 5.
You're adding another Symphony No. 5. We'll hear about that in just a bit. Not quite as familiar as the Beethoven 5.
But just as great. This is just a great piece of music, again, that starts... Well, yeah, not quite as famous of an opening as the Beethoven. But it evokes... Actually, this whole symphony to me, it's Romeo and Juliet. If you know Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet, it's very, very similar in tone and in intonation and the ways, you know, the chords follow each other and characters. We're going to listen to it. Just had a great scherzo movement and a very, very powerful, very surprising ending. You know, I actually like the fact that we're doing this concert on the 5th. It's totally by accident.
Did you plan that?
Totally by accident, actually, that we had the BBC for this date. But this whole concert is about 2/5 and 2 really gigantic and amazing pieces that would, you know, just blow you away in very different ways. One is the Beethoven 5. The other one is actually the Prokofiev 5, because this is also a very popular piece. It's being played all the time, outdoor concerts as well, so not only in concert halls, because it's just so strong. It's really strong and it captures your imagination, and it's probably one of the best pieces of Sergei Prokofiev.
You know, Beethoven struggled with his personality. He wasn't the most charming guy, and he struggled with his hearing loss. But Prokofiev struggled, too. And I think what I hear in both pieces is the struggle and the resolution. I hear more of a resolution in Beethoven than I do in Prokofiev for some reason.
Interesting what you're saying. You know, I don't think Beethoven had a shrink, so he had to work it through himself. But Prokofiev somehow could actually resolve it for himself, I think. Like, he could just put these problems aside and just go for it. And even not to be happy, but to show happy, or just to turn the knob to, you know, to be upbeat or pull something out of the head that would make the symphony sound happy or sound optimistic at the end, or just have all this energy and just, you know, clean everything and just blow it out and not go back to these, you know, dark thoughts that he was struggling with. And this is a perfect example for working through your own problems and putting them into a strong piece of music.
Little happy here.
I think it's very Shostakovich-like, by the way.
Yes.
So it reminds me to the music of a fellow Russian composer. Very sarcastic, mm-hmm. full of character, and it sounds very visual, right? I mean, you can kind of see a war movie or something, you know, happening in the background.
Yeah, Prokofiev wrote this after he had come back to what was now, in his time, the Soviet Union. He had gone to America and he was living in Paris, and he came back to Russia, and then he was put in an artist colony with other composers. And I think it took him like 4 months to write this. He just kind of ripped this one right out. So I'm wondering if it's a comment on his current situation, if he's trying to sound happy and he's not. Again, it doesn't matter, but we're sitting here talking about it anyhow.
I think we should hold up a sign at the concert, "Welcome to Crimea" or something like that for this movement. You
yeah.
know, I mean, that military machine always appears in, mm-hmm. in the music of Shostakovich and Prokofiev and even Stravinsky, who lived in, you know, France or later the United States and left the so-called Soviet Union when it became Soviet Union. But still, I mean, you know, this generation had wars in their lives and nobody could escape it. And somehow they had to reflect to what was happening in the world.
Well, the famous story about the premiere of this piece, Prokofiev was conducting and just he had to hold before he began conducting because you could hear the guns and the tanks crossing the river. You know, the war was going on outside the concert hall while this piece was being played for the first time.
Well, there you go. There is the power of music for you.
Yeah.
I mean, there are famous stories, not only with this piece, but many Shostakovich symphonies and concertos that they were making music as you know, tanks were rolling and they were shelling the city, because it was a way for people to come together. You know, Churchill had that famous saying, like, if we cut back on arts, what are we fighting for? So that was the same reaction in different countries with strong musical cultures, that this is ours and we're fighting for it.
Mm-hmm. And he kept on going with the guns blazing outside the concert hall. Let's listen to a little bit of the third movement. Tell me about what's coming up here in the first part of the third movement.
Well, either Romeo or Juliet or both of them are back. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's very much like the balcony scene from Romeo and Juliet. I was actually lucky enough to conduct the complete ballet with dance and sets and everything back at the Budapest Opera about 10 years ago. So it completely sounds like that. So it's totally the music of Romeo and Juliet.
It is balletic there. You could dance to that. the third movement of Prokofiev's Symphony No. 5. You can hear it live along with Beethoven's Symphony No. 5 this Saturday evening at the Mark C. Smith Concert Hall. Concert begins at 7:30. My guest is Gregory Voita. Now, of all the Fifth Symphonies, we talked about the coincidence of it falling on the 5th. Is it a coincidence, or did you plan this, or how did that all come about?
I wanted to do a pair of fifths. From the very beginning here in Huntsville, and somehow it just happened to be on April 5th. This is actually our third Fifth Symphony this season, because we did the Sibelius, if you remember, that program. So and somehow there is a magic in this number, because we have so many great pieces with that number and the word symphony after it. So, you know, the Sibelius, the Prokofiev, Beethoven, Mahler, and you could go on. I mean, they're great, great pieces of music. And I don't know why. Maybe there is a magic in number 5.
I guess we'll have to find out.
You have to come to listen and find it out for yourself.
And like the Beethoven 5, the Prokofiev 5 sort of builds an intensity, and you have your quiet moment and then the big release of energy at the end. And I was reading the program notes from the San Francisco Symphony's performance of this symphony, and the commentator says, as you listen to the rousing final minutes of the symphony, ask yourself what adjectives and nouns come to mind. See, words again. Victory, escape, joy, frenzy, finality, vigor, closure, terror.
End of season comes to mind. No, I think it's a great, jokes aside, a great way to end the season, because, of course, we have our next season ready, and we're ready for our audience to, you know, start the season again when it's time for that. But also, I think it's just great thing to end with excitement and with great pieces like these.
There's that locomotive.
such a great ending. I mean, he's going on with this loud and heavy and powerful orchestra sound, and then at the end he drops it and he has solo strings playing the same little, you know, machine music there, and then there's this big crescendo at the end. And it's just a great idea to end the symphony. It reminds me to another out-of-the-box idea to end the symphony number 5, that Sibelius with all those rests and, you know, just chords, mm-hmm. and then wait after the long melody. So, you know, he was a genius. I mean, he knew how to finish a long symphony where you already used every idea you had, and yet you still have one for the end, and it just makes you jump on your feet.
And people will at the end of the concert. That's this Saturday evening. Now, if you can't make it to the Saturday evening concert, you do have an open rehearsal, so you can see how Gregory works with the musicians and see how it all happens. Opus Tadpole also happening. I don't know which instrument is featured, but it looks like you've been having a great turnout for that.
Yes. More and more people, more and more kids are showing up, and it's fun, you know. You can have fun and learn at the same time. And as usual, we have sneak preview at 11 at the VBC. It's only $5 to get in, and you get to hear our wonderful orchestra to do the dress rehearsal, where you get to hear all the pieces the way they are written, but also get a little sneak preview into, mm-hmm. you know, how we do rehearsals.
There's some starting and stopping. And another good thing is, if you have kids and you want to expose them to this music and let them hear it live and they get wiggly, you can take them out.
Yes. If your kids get wiggly during the real performance, you can take them out.
It's
but
not
yes,
just...
yes, it's more casual then an evening concert.
And that is at 11 o'clock in the morning. So, gosh, I thought you did a fantastic job of programming with the new music. I love the Bela Fleck Banjo Concerto and taking the symphony out on the road to the different venues. Can you give us a hint of maybe what's coming next season?
More of great music.
Oh yeah.
we'll be out soon, and you can read all the program, and it's going to be a mix of familiar and mix of new and unusual solo instruments. Just one example, the principal tuba player of the New York Philharmonic is coming and playing John Williams' Tuba Concerto.
Uh-huh.
Just one example.
That's the piece that was playing when the earthquake hit in Los Angeles.
Oh, really?
And the conductor had died?
That's not because the piece.
We don't know this.
I hope not. But it's on the same program with Mozart and Richard Strauss. It's a Richard Strauss anniversary year season in 14 and 15. And we have Symphony Fantastique, and we have a new opera. That's all I'm going to say now. We have enough.
Okay.
We're going to talk about this more in details, and as I said, it's going to be on our website hso.org, and also the new program book is coming out in flyers, so everybody's going to be able to see it. And it's our 60th season coming up next season.
Yeah, why do you think Huntsville Symphony Orchestra has done so well for such a long time, for a little town like this?
Well, because of the community and because of the audience. I mean, we have a great audience here, very loyal and very interested in what the symphony has to offer. And, you know, 60 years, this is the longest continuously operating orchestra in the state, the Huntsville Symphony. We mm-hmm. really proud of that, and we're keeping up the good job to keep that title and of course to present things that you can only present with live musicians and live orchestra and in a concert hall for a live audience, a live concert, and we're doing a casual classic series again, and great pops concerts are coming up as well, so it's going to be a great season.
Well, thank you for a great season. We're looking forward to another one. Thank you, Gregory.